Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Tonight, we dive into Season 4, Episode 9 of Better Call Saul. Auf Wiedersehen. In fact, someone says that to us. Eduardo Salamanca plays a very friendly visit, a couple of friendly visits, and Jimmy and Kim, well, they have some fun, but they really have it out. This episode had a little bit of everything. The Better Call Saul after show starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
There's nothing, to me, there's nothing more German than Wayne Newton singing Dankeschön. And really, we don't know what that letter that Werner wrote to Mike said, but I think it just had the lyrics of Dankeschön on it. Welcome to the Better Call Saul After Show. I'm Christian Blatt, joined, as always, by Al Gregg.
Your boy, Al G, the other Bavarian boy. This is the Bavarian boy. I am a young Bavarian boy, a.k.a. Yes. Young Street Life.
Yes, and we are definitely living the street life. I believe in German it is the Strasse life. A lot of German going on in here, and we're going to sort of tackle these in order, not necessarily order of importance. We kind of want to build up to Jimmy and Kim because I think there's a lot to really dive into in there. So if you're watching live, welcome. Join us in the chat. We always like to interact with everybody in the chat. We always have a great chat. You always help Al and I think about things in a way a little different than we expected. And sometimes you guys don't like us, so that's great too, because that helps me think about myself in a way that I tend to not think about myself, because I actually like me. I like Al too. So we welcome everybody. And if you're watching the archive version after the fact, go ahead and leave those comments all the same, because we will take a look at them next week. So there's some specifics to dive into, and we will also have a little bit of news, and of course, our very popular uncomfortable moment. And Al, don't let me forget the uncomfortable
Shall
moment.
Shall not forget.
Because that would be an uncomfortable moment if Can't I have forgot that one. The uncomfortable moment. Just sort of talk about the episode on the whole, Al, and then we'll dive into the specifics. Your thoughts. Yeah.
Jam-packed, 80 minutes.
Yeah.
Full course meal, great heist style set piece, great, man, compelling scene with Slippin' Jimmy and Slippin' Kimmy having it out, the whole thing, and it brings out that whole, like, I don't know, I guess, like, the whole subtext of Slippin' Jimmy's low self-esteem.
Yeah, everything that's been bubbling beneath the surface with Jimmy and Kimmy, basically their entire relationship is, you know, never really up in the forefront. And we see the price of not dealing with that, not dealing in any terms at all with the brother passing away. So we will get into all of that, and definitely let us know in the chat what you thought of the episode and some of the different specifics. Let's start off, let's start small and get bigger as we go. Let's talk about our new friend, Eduardo Salamanca, who pays two visits in the episode. And I wish that I had seen this episode at home before I came here to the studio, because I have a bell like that.
Okay.
So I might bring it for next week, and we'll hit the bell when need be. But obviously he goes to see Hector and gives him sort of a little memento, explains the whole story, which, you know, he had to read because it was in Spanish. And he gives him the bell. You know, I think that there's the key moment for me, Al, is, and you know, we don't really know Eduardo, but he's just you're still in there. And that's what he really wanted to see. So he gives him the bell, and you can see that there's a couple of great moments in that old folks home. One, the old lady who's annoyed by the bell, and then the other lady when Nacho walks by her, grabs her purse.
Classic.
Tell us your thoughts about that scene, and then we'll talk about the visit with Gus.
First of all, it just goes to show what the Salamanca men, what they have in common is like this deep, sinister, sadistic nature. They're bonding over this time. They burnt this disrespectful professor to the ground who dared turn his back on Hector. And the whole time, listen, this is the deal, right? The bell was because while he's burning her, getting beat up and destroyed and killed,
he's calling for help on
the bell for his bellboy, and that's the meaning of the bell.
Yeah,
it just gives chills down.
Remember
my spine.
How much this bell made us laugh when that guy was begging for his life? Yeah, so why don't you go ahead and use that bell? That'll be
the depth of their depravity.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I just kind of like that. You know, when Nacho is asked to go get himself some Jello. We just off in the distance, all we hear, a lot of that bell, a lot of ding, ding, ding. So speaking of Nacho, incredibly uncomfortable when Eduardo decides to pay a visit to Los Pollos Hermanos and sit down with Gus Fring. You could tell it's like the whole time he's just like, this is the last thing that we should be doing. Mm-hmm. This is the last thing I want you to do. But Hector says that we should thank you, Gus, for saving his life. And I think that's one of those moments where he's being a little less than sincere. And I'm pretty sure Gus is a smart guy.
Mm.
And he knows what the subtext of all that meeting was. How did you interpret the conversation?
Exactly the same way. That's what's called the take your temperature episode. Like when you send somebody over to, you know, you send that little jab out just to check them and see how they respond. It was kind of like the same thing. Oh, if, you know, maybe if Don Alado, he doesn't want us to get along. If we, you know, kind of cut him out and work together, that would really piss him off. We could do good together, right? Yeah. Wink, wink.
Don Alado likes the bad blood between us. You know what? It's right. You don't want to go up against him. You know, that's that old, like, oh, yeah, you could never handle taking him on. You're right. You should do that. And, I, you know, Gus, very matter of fact, I'm satisfied with the current arrangement.
So got the right answer, right on the ball.
Yeah, so Eduardo is definitely, he's taking a lot of temperatures. He wants to see a lot of what's going on because, you know, at the last time we see him in this episode, he says to Nacho, 6 keys a week. Where do you do that? Oh, a chicken farm way out of town. Show me.
Take me.
Need to go to that chicken farm.
All up in his business.
Yeah, let's go to that chicken farm. Maybe we'll see it next week. Who knows? So, yeah, this is obviously just kind of, I don't know. It's almost like he's going all in on everything.
But let me jump in there. What I'm really liking about Eduardo, Lalo, his character.
Lalo,
what I'm really liking about him is he just seems so happy and amused with himself when he's talking to people. Like, from his very introduction where he meets Nacho, and he's in there making the food. And
I love
that. Family recipe. And, like, he gets so into it when he's talking to Hector about the story about the time they killed this guy. He's so filled with, you know, virility and excitement. It's the kind of guy that shoots you with a smile on his face. That's what I get about him.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. He's a larger-than-life character and a welcome addition. Very funny, for sure. So that is sort of our first collection of characters throughout the course of the episode. This is sort of the smaller piece, but I, you know, Al doesn't always watch the preview for next week. I did. I feel like this is all going to come to a head next week, and we will see. And then we will shift momentarily towards our German friends and, you know, Mike supervising them. But first, Al, I believe you have what we like to call in the business a very important message for our audience at home.
Important announcement, ladies and gentlemen. Ding, 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 ding.
I need that bell.
Hey, After Buzzers, our network produces after shows for nearly all your favorite TV shows. From dramas, reality TV, sci-fi, and more, there's no network that works harder to serve television fans. But we need your help. We're asking that you please subscribe to one or more of our YouTube channels. By subscribing to our channel, YouTube will suggest content that's tailor-made for you, and you'll help AfterBuzz continue to grow. And if you're worried about those pesky notifications, don't be, because they're optional. So hit that subscribe button now for this channel, and check out our other AfterBuzz YouTube channels as well. Let us know you did so in the comments, and we'll thank you on air and give you a shout-out. For now, thanks for being the best fans and for helping us be the ESPN of TV Talk.
Thank you, Al. Yes, and a little shameless self-promotion. Al will be a guest on tomorrow's Trump Report, which is one of the shows I host here on AfterBuzz. That's 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific.
I speak Trump, too.
I think most of us do. All you need to really be able to say is anonymous, and then you can sound like the president. But we'll talk more about that another time. So let's start talking about the Germans. We see that there is sort of a little hitch in a planned demolition with a little blinking red light. Well, then Werner's got to go follow it all the way down. And I wasn't quite sure what was happening at first. And it becomes pretty apparent that he's just losing it. And, you know, I mean, look, I've had a panic attack in my life. It is nowhere near that intense. So I don't even know what to characterize it at. But do you think that that was just the stress of, yes, that moment dealing with the demolition as planned, but is it just months and months kind of compounded into the 1 minute, Al?
I think it's all that. I think it's all the above, the months and months compounded into 1 minute, the fact that something's going wrong, the fact that Mike's there and everybody's looking at him, and that he has to go down this hole by himself. And this is something I want to bounce off of you and our people at home in the chat. When he said, okay, when Mike originally says, okay, we know there's something wrong with the wiring, and Mike assumes, why isn't Kai going down? And Werner's like, no, it's my job. Do you guys think he was covering for Kai? Because I'm like, if you're the supervisor, if you're the engineer, you shouldn't be the one crawling around in the hole. That should be Kai's job, right?
Yeah, I had that thought that it seems like just in general he's covering for Kai, and we'll talk about Kai in a moment.
Right.
And then also, especially when they pulled back to a wide shot, I just, for some reason, not understanding the physics of how it worked, I just expected him to blow up at some point.
That was the other thing.
Like when he's like, when he finds it and he starts to do that, I'm like, well, he's clearly going to blow up. And look, I was wrong, and that's one of the great things about this show. There's another key point that we'll get to in a moment.
And by the way, the breathing heavy and all that, you know, combined with the, like, you know, trying to set the fuse, yeah, it was a perfect scenario.
Yeah, and, you know, look, a lot of shows, when you think something's going to happen, it definitely happens. And that was not the case with this. So I definitely thought that was interesting. That goes off as planned. Kind of a nice coordination of, you know, timing it with the truck going over the bump at the same time. Nobody hears anything. You know, nobody's wiser. So then, you know, Werner kind of lets Mike know. There's a little celebratory moment. They're drinking the beers, and Mike's like, no. And they're, Mike. And then, you know what? He's mad at the people, too. Why not? He's going to have a beer. But then Werner, he's what he says is he's missing his wife. He's been married 26 years. He's never been away from her this long. And, you know, look, Mike gives him good advice. You want to see your wife? Finish a job. And then you can go home, and you're getting a ton of money. Probably won't even need to work again. Definitely won't have to go away again is actually what he says. But all right, we'll put you on the phone. You know, we'll get that. We were talking before we started. Give us your thoughts on Werner's need to go home and see his wife.
Yes, we heard him talk about his wife, and this is the longest he's been away. And excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, I'm the single guy, you're the married guy, so I'm going to defer to the married guy, you know, for his experience in this arena. But personally, I get that having a life partner, you know, being separate from them, you miss them, you feel adrift, might feel incomplete. But I was talking to Christian here, and I was saying, but going into the panic attacks, that seems like there's something else going on.
I think there's a lot more going on.
There's a lot more going on that he's not telling us, and that we don't know what's going on with this character. And maybe it's because, you know, not just obviously the stress of the job and the stress of them being down there, but there's some underlying issue, emotional defect that hasn't come up about Werner that I'm sure Mike's going to discover. Hopefully it won't be like when it's too late, though.
Yes, and so ultimately what happens, as we learned at the end of the episode, Werner runs off and he, you know, we kind of see him taking a look at everybody. He's eyeing the cameras, and Robert Kirkendall in the chat has the same thought I did. He says, I thought Werner was going to kill himself. It's definitely what I thought was going to happen. That's exactly a perfect example of the show not doing what you expected. I didn't think it was going to escape. I also didn't think it was possible to escape the way that they're watching and everything. But he'd figured out a way to kind of do those flares so that the cameras didn't pick things up. Smart guy. Jeffrey Townend also says to me, "See? Told you Werner wasn't gay." You know what? I'm not sold. Not sold. That could be part of his issues, too. Although, he's holed up with a bunch of dudes, so that probably...
And he may not be running back to his wife. He may be running back to the guy at the bar.
Maybe that's what he's doing. We don't know. We'll find out next week. But, yeah, I mean, look, that's just how I interpreted that moment. I'm not backing down. And Matthew Garth points out, Wiedersehen, which is spelled Wiedersehen, has a lot of the same letters as Werner dies, just saying.
I like that. But more than anything else, it means he was out of here. Yeah. Goodbye, ladies and gentlemen. I got to say this. So obviously, okay, that's a huge thing. He's Wiener, the head of the project, has taken off. You know, he's jumped ship. I feel like I can't believe he's that naive to feel like these guys wouldn't be able to track him down if they were able to set up a meeting and interview in the first place. They know all about his family. He has to know that. Can he be that short-sighted and that much in panic mode where he has to get out? Can he has to be that claustrophobic he would make that huge of a mistake? Because at this point, I don't even think it's even worth coming back, man. It's like, you know, you don't run away from these guys.
Yeah, a couple of points. Tim Reno 72, thanks for being with us most weeks. We appreciate that, Tim Reno 72. I got that Werner took off for some strange. Hey, that kind of goes back to what I'm saying, that he isn't actually trying to see his wife. My thought was he was going to go see his wife and never come back. But Tim Reno asked the question, wouldn't Mike hang on to their passports? I am certain that Mike has their passports. But he probably figures he has a way. He can, take a boat, you know. He's got to get to the airport first. So that'll be interesting to see how all that plays out. The interesting thing is when he said that he just wants to go away for 4 or 5 days, the Kai would be in charge. And you can tell Mike doesn't say anything, but he's just like, yeah, that's the last guy that's going to be in charge. Right. The guy that I'm paying very special attention to.
Right.
But who knew that Werner was going to be the one to run away? And, Jeffrey Townend points out Mike's going to have to rely on Kai to finish the project, which can't end well. We all will be revealed in the future. So I think that will be – I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing how this resolves itself.
Real quick, too, let me interject. It just kind of gives us that payoff that they foreshadowed last week that – you know, that misdirect where the whole time we thought Kai was the weak link, but really, you know, it was Werner who was the weak link the whole time.
Yeah, and I think that Kai was definitely a red herring in that way. Definitely a little bit of a problem child, but he's not the actual weak link that we were, expecting him to be or led to believe that he would be. Anyway, let us know in the chat any of your thoughts on any of this with the Germans. We can always continue talking about any of the storylines in this episode or past episodes. Just go ahead and join us in the chat, live on YouTube. And again, as always, you can leave an archive message in the archive version of the YouTube stream or on iTunes for you audio-only listeners. We always appreciate everybody who stays up late, especially on the East Coast, that you just can't go to bed until you talk to Al and I about Better Call Saul, so we appreciate that. All right, let's talk about the real meat of this episode. The episode starts with such a fun interaction with Jimmy and Kim running a top-notch scam. I mean, there are costumes. There are props. There's fake limps.
There's baby milk.
I was going to say. There,
breast milk.
There are phantom children. You know, imaginary child factors into it. And Jimmy and the – I love that Jimmy's got the Jimmy Buffett shirt on because he's just that guy. And I thought that was amazing. And I just sort of – I just like how well they can work together, you know. It's the whole thing, you know, the lady that we meet at the, you know, whatever, the bureau where you register plans and records and things in Lubbock. And they, you know, they're checking, make sure everything's great. That lady's very understanding, and Kim's working her, and she's working her really well. You know, single mom, you know, my brother means well. And then we see the idiot brother, a.k.a. Jimmy, and he's got the kid in the car, leaves the milk on the plans. Oh, it's all right. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and switch them for you. And Kim, oh, well, Kim's got the other plans, these plans that she hasn't seen, and they go ahead and get approved. And as we find out when they're talking in the diner, just to get a 13% bigger building for Mesa Verde. Al, your thoughts on the level of scamming that was going on at the beginning of the episode?
The level of scam was high with these two. Like you say, the force is strong with this one. The scam was strong with these two.
Very strong.
Very strong. Perhaps a little too strong. Have you ever heard, I'm sure we've all heard that statement, like, okay, let's say if you're going to be, you want to miss work, and you want to say, okay, what's my excuse? Am I going to be sick? Well, you don't want to say, you know, my mother died or my dog died, something that could really happen, okay? There was part of me that felt that Kim on the crutches was a little too close to home because she had just gotten herself busted up, and to see her come limping in on that was a little too close to home.
I think that was definitely for us to be like, oh no, what happened now?
Yeah.
You know, that was a great way to start the episode, like, why is she on crutches? What did you do?
Yeah, again.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that, and like, you know, just, we know Jimmy and Kim don't last as a couple, but along those same lines is a baby. I'm just like, you're thinking that you're in this whole baby dynamic, and I'm like, is that something you really want to joke about? You don't want to, like, jinx or curse the fact that you got, whatever, you might actually have a baby. And all those things, I don't know, maybe call me, what do you call it, superstitious.
Superstitious, yeah.
But those things kind of bother me.
Yeah, no, I know. Look, but all those things very accurately pull on the right heartstrings for the lady working there, and you know, it all worked out. Good for Mesa Verde getting a bigger building.
Who cares, though?
Before we talk more about this, Sicko Deuce says, "Is it just me or did this season fly by too fast? What with the Lalo storyline just taking shape with only two episodes left?" Yeah, the season has flown by. Next week is the season finale, and did you think that this week's episode was jam-packed and overstuffed at, what was it, 80 minutes? Well, we've got 85 minutes next week. It's an hour 25 minutes. So be ready. We'll still have the same amount of time to talk about it. But there'll be more to talk about. Anyway, I definitely agree with that. So I thought that was really fun. Then we kind of went away from Jimmy and Kim for a little while in the episode. You know, I was riding high. I was so happy for them. I'm like, look at how well they do, you know. And they do have an interesting conversation in the diner about using their powers for good. And Jimmy makes a good point. It's like, come on. We just helped Mesa Verde get a 13% bigger building. Is this really using our powers for good? And she just gives him that look. You can tell that look. Well, Jimmy gets that look a lot, especially from Kim. But, you know, just in life, he probably gets it. And he's just like, oh, yeah, all right. We'll know it when we see it. Sure. He's very, very agreeable. And then we will see all that come to a
head
a little later.
Tell me this, Christian. The dangerous thing about that, I think she's kind of awoken the sleeping scam giant in Jimmy.
Yeah.
I think that's the problem because immediately he's already thinking about the next thing and how he can make some money and da 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 and double his mind's already like 10 steps ahead on the next scam.
Yeah. And DJ Beats G points out that Kim just couldn't accept denying the CEO of Mesa Verde that last second request for the new branch layout. And yeah, we saw that last week. I just figured it was a dead issue. She just was like, I don't want to work that hard. I'm having more fun scamming. But good as catch. DJ Beats G points out, Slippin' Kimmy finds a way. She definitely found a way.
Slippin' Kimmy is a bit of a people pleaser. That's my problem with her. That's going to be her downfall. People pleaser always going to save everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, some people can't be saved. All right. So then we have very impressive Jimmy McGill attends his hearing. And he's insincere. And that comes across. I was watching that. And, you know, he's doing all right. And it's funny because the way he recounts it to Kim. And he's like, and then she asked me this question. What does the law mean to you? And, of course, I nailed it. I'm like, no, you didn't. You were not ready for it.
There was a long pause in there, too.
Yeah. This is not my official uncomfortable moment, but it was an uncomfortable
right
moment.
Right up there.
Where he's – I wrote it down. He's like, the law? Yeah. Okay.
I just saw a big question mark over his head. I'm a lawyer, but the law?
It might as well have, he might as well have given her the old Scooby-Doo. The law? Ruh-roh.
Raggy?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and his answer, the correspondence school, what? And the University of American Samoa.
Go Land Crabs.
I love the Go Land Crabs. That was great. And then, you know, he walks out of the meeting, and he's about to walk back in, which, you know, pure Jimmy. And we were watching it just before we did this, and I was like, don't go back in. And I'm like, don't go back in. And he doesn't go back in. But he does – I don't know if that's still a stenographer, but whoever, you know, was taking the notes. I don't know that that's a stenographer, but
– it sounded like it.
Essentially the stenographer. And he's just like, what did they decide? And she has the look on her face, and he's like, oh, come on. And he chases, you know, he chases the guy down the stairwell. You know, he runs around. He goes full Jimmy. Well, he doesn't go full Jimmy on the guy because there's no actually violent interaction, but except for to his poor briefcase. What'd your briefcase do to you, bro? Come on. So, anyway, I think that it's, you know, some members of the committee found you somewhat insincere, and that carries him through. It's insincere, you know. Just go.
Moi?
Yeah, like me. Come on, I'm the most sincere guy ever. And, you know, before he calls Kim to tell her about it. But see, like, a very nice moment. She's got a really nice new briefcase for him. She's wrapping it up because she is so checked out of Mesa Verde. I mean, she'll run a scam to help them, but she's really checked out.
Oh, and don't forget she's putting the world best lawyer again on the couch.
I know. I was going to mention that. Yeah, sorry. No, it's fine. Again.
Again.
Yeah. And then you got to cross out the again now. Like, you know, used to be the best lawyer. So, you know, it's a sweet moment. You don't see a lot of sweet moments, and I appreciated that. But they take the call. She takes a call from Jimmy, and then they have it out on the roof. So everything leading up until that moment, what did you think of Jimmy's hearing? What did you think about his lack of sincerity? Do you agree with the board? Because I do.
I agree with the board, yeah. But the funny thing is the show has been allowing Jimmy to use his charisma of BS, of bullshit on everybody, and get away with it. Everybody's been falling with a hook, line, and sinker, and this is the first time that someone hasn't. But it points to a greater problem, along with the fact that Jimmy might not be the most honest person. Aside from his problems with
Jimmy McGill? No, you're wrong.
Aside from his problems with veracity, it is his hubris. That is the problem. His inability to keep the story tame. He always has to go, like, super big with it. Oh, just the big old country kid from, you know, the University of Samoa, Go Land Crabs, and all I wanted to do was help. Jimmy, if you just would have had a normal person's response. I think we're all thinking, like, when you say, who influenced you? The first thing we all would have said was Chuck, my brother.
I did expect that.
And you didn't even have to, you wouldn't even necessarily have to go into, you know, about the, I don't know, just the fine components of the law and legalities. It just maybe just Chuck's character. But that was something like a hole that you could have driven a truck through. And on top of that, that pause when she asked him about the law, she looked like she might as well just ask him, you know, like, what is pi equal to? You know, that's how vacant his face looked when she asked him that question to a quote lawyer.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about insincere. If he had talked about Chuck and what he had meant, that would have been very insincere. But that's what they would have wanted to hear. That's what you need to get in there. But as we found when he's talking to Kim, he's just like, what, my brother used to be alive and now he's dead. I don't understand what that has to do with anything. That's kind of the fundamental problem, as we've been dealing with, especially the early episodes of the season. But just there's sort of this theme throughout the season is not processing it, not dealing with it in any way, shape, or form. Except to take the money to buy some burner phones. Mm-hmm. Drop phones, as it were.
And case in point, man, the one thing that he's not dealing with defines his psyche. Kim, you just think I'm slipping Jimmy. Just like my brother, basically. Those were his brother's words. And he can't get that out of his head. But Jimmy is so our boy James McGill has so little self-reflection, he can't even see that the one thing he's refusing to deal with defines pretty much his entire existence, and why he stays in these situations.
DJ Beats G again points out, Jimmy can never sincerely deal with Chuck's death because he'd have to go back to the malpractice insurance issues that basically killed Chuck. So my guess is he insincerely puts on an act of mourning. I mean, I don't even think he does that. He just, you know, I think he thinks people know that he's supposed to be in mourning, so maybe he'll occasionally just give people thanks, you know, like, thank you for your thoughts, you know. It's like, I'm getting by. But he doesn't mean any of it, because the way that he's processing it is like, yeah, whatever, this doesn't have any impact on me. There was an interesting question prior to that, which was that Tim Reno pointed out, Jimmy is turned down for reinstatement. If he legally changes his name to Saul Goodman, can he retake the bar and become a lawyer again? That's one way to do it. Or you change your name to Saul Goodman, you get somebody to file some phony paperwork, and that it looks like you passed the bar. Maybe you never passed the bar. That's where I feel like it's going. As just Saul Goodman is just going to kind of be invented, or you know, maybe you buy somebody's law license. Who knows? But obviously, all yet to be revealed. All right, so let's really talk about this fight though that they have, and. Look, Jimmy's very emotional, and I completely understand that. You know, everything the past year, the stupid job at the cell phone store, and yes, all the scams. It was all building towards this moment where he gets reinstated, he can be a lawyer. And I think that Kim makes some great points. She's done nothing but support him. I was on your side from the day we met. I have a job. I drop everything to help you. And she gives some very specific examples of times that, where maybe she shouldn't have helped him and she did. And then the office comes up and it's like, yeah, I do all this stuff for you. And then this stupid office. And, and then she talks about bringing him to her office. And then the line of the episode for me was kick a man when he's down, and Kim just looks at him and says, Jimmy, you're always down. And it's absolutely true. He's always down. Al, how do you process anybody's ever been in a fight with somebody you're romantically involved with? They always know exactly both of them, by the way. But right. Kim clearly had a lot of stuff beneath the surface. What did you think?
While it was the right button to push, I'm going to cut Jimmy a little bit of slack that our situations all depend on the way you look at it. Yes, Jimmy always appears to be down and, you know, like the guy who's like trying to come from behind. But if we were to turn around and look at this as like a glass half full situation, you know, he's gotten a job. He's been able to bring in some money to put some food on the table. He's done all his PPD stuff. He's done his preparation, got his recommendations. So really, life is looking good and things are on the upswing. It doesn't have to be that he's always, you know, he may have been down, but he's not out. He's back on his feet. So I think there's room for him to maybe kind of pat himself on the back. Not even pat himself on the back, saying, I'm on the right track. But obviously, Kim knows the one thing to say, which to make his like self-esteem kick in, as if he was a little kid again, that same little six-year-old kid, and his brother's telling him you're not good enough again. And that's what's going to stay with him. He can be with the woman who loves him and will do anything for him. Well, you're just rolling around with me, you know, you're just slumming with me for this little slipping hustler guy, you know, for a good time. And he's never going to be good enough, even when he is. But there's also truth to it, too. Kim's there. We talked about it. Kim has some issues with men, and she's with the guy, I would think she will always be with the guy who she needs to fix.
Yeah, I definitely think that that would be a great way to describe it. But speaking of being with the guy she needs to fix, that's sort of where this storyline winds up for this episode. Jimmy comes home. They don't talk at first, and he's like, I messed it all up. And she's like, you still want to be a lawyer? We can start with that. And, they can appeal. He doesn't want to appeal. Well, it's not that he doesn't want to appeal, but he just feels like once they hear that he's insincere, it's basically all over. So
real quick, my man. Yeah. Christian and chat, people in the chat. He comes in with the box. I was almost thinking like he's packing to leave and get out of here and move out.
Yeah, he's packing, we see him packing books, but he's also, you know, got like a one of those big garment bags. He seems to be packing up some suits.
Yeah,
it's like he's gonna pack up to leave because I could see where he's coming from. That, you know, it's like, well, we're not really gonna come back from that without really dealing with it. And she goes right to him, and you know, she could have just sat there and continued drinking.
Kim found a way, and to her credit, I actually thought Kim was going to come over and like put her hand on his shoulder, you know, and like maybe help him put his things away. But it wasn't. That in your face. Wasn't that on the nose? So I think what you pointed out, what you said about him, let's start with the law, is something good to start with. But what I feel like telling Jimmy, tell me if you saw this, man. Kim loves him no matter what, man.
I agree.
He can F up all he wants.
And that's the problem. Yeah. That's her problem.
Oh, there you go.
She loves him no matter what.
And maybe that's why Jimmy can't bring himself to stay with her. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I feel like we're going to see it all next week. Next week is the end of the season, and as I mentioned a few moments ago, it is it's an hour and 25 minutes, so it's almost an hour and a half. It's pretty close to an hour and a half. So plan your viewing accordingly. I know I will. And we will be back here to discuss. Now, in our final moments, we have our uncomfortable moments and the news. I'd like to start with the uncomfortable moments just because I've already mentioned mine. For me personally, it's an amazing moment. It's incredible. But when she says, Jimmy, you were always down, it's really more of a gut punch. It's like, oof, but very uncomfortable to be in the moment following that. What did you have, Al?
My uncomfortable moment was the moment when Wiener's going down the stairs through the little hole, and just the way it was shot. It was once again one of those like quintessential Breaking Bad segments. You know, no dialogue. You just hear the sounds. You just hear the steps, the creaking, and you just see this one kind of like light flaring in his face, and it looks it's very disorienting. And at this point, you don't know whether he's going down like a black hole or stairs. And he revealed that he's on these little steps, these little flimsy steps. And he's tracing, and he's having this panic attack, and he's trying to trace, you know, where the faulty wiring is. And he's breathing heavy and all that. But then when he finally finds the wire, the camera does this weird, like, 180, man.
Yeah.
Which was incredible.
It all looked so great. Yeah. And it's so dark, you know, and we can see everything that's going on. But, just beautifully composed shots. This episode directed by Vince Gilligan. Worth pointing out.
Yeah.
You know, not that episodes directed by other people wouldn't also look great. All right. So in our final few moments here, I know that you do have some news. So we want to get to the news, especially ahead of next week's season finale.
Yes, sir. TV news. Okay, this week our news comes to us from CinemaBlend. Ladies and gentlemen, why Better Call Saul fans shouldn't compare Mike to Breaking Bad's Walter White. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think those two are obviously easy to compare. You look at them, they're hard-boiled, they're bald, they got the goatee. These guys have been through hell and back, and they've broken bad. Well, Mike, the character who plays Mike Armitage, Jason, am I getting his name right? Jonathan Banks.
Yeah.
Jonathan Banks, when put forth with that notion, are you the Walter White of this particular
period? Yeah.
The one, you know, who's breaking bad and going hard boiled? And then Jonathan has a very interesting response. He says that he believes that while it may appear that he may have broken bad to help his family and, you know, use these and make this money, this dirty money on the side to help his daughter-in-law and his granddaughter in the same way that perhaps Walter White wanted to help his family when he found out he had cancer and he's going to leave them with nothing. Here's the twist. Jonathan Banks believes that Mike broke bad a long time ago.
Long before we met him. I definitely agree with that. It's... you know what? I bet that's a fascinating story. We'll probably never really get it, but you know, hey, look, at some point, Better Call Saul, and maybe we'll get you know, Mike Armitage early years.
And I'm gonna throw this out there too. We've touched on about, you know, how Mike's son died, how Maddie died, you know, and it's this whole thing where, you know, Maddie was debating whether to take this money. He didn't want to, and it was Mike who actually told him to take the money. The thing backfires on him, and he still gets murdered by these cops anyway because they still didn't trust him. And so obviously, Mike if Mike is urging his son to take the money, just go along and get along. We know Mike's hands have been dirty for a long time. And violence has always been an option.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely agree. And I remember you sent that to me earlier in the week or last week, whatever. And it's definitely an interesting conversation point. Plenty of interesting conversation in the chat. One thing I'll point out really fast. Team Marino 72 says, glad to see AMC allow an F-bomb through. They must be watching American Horror Story on FX. On these kind of basic cable channels, they're very careful not to use the F-word. Occasionally, you do hear it, and it's because if they were to bleep it, just sort of artistically, it would sound really bad, And I remember them bleeping it on an episode of Mad Men because I don't think it was as important to that moment. So you definitely notice it when you hear it, and I think, if you're watching this show, you're grown up. You're going to be able to process that word. Anyway, as always, thanks to everyone in the chat. And, one of the things that I'll miss after next week is all these great people in the chat. It's always been so much fun talking about the show with you guys. But we've got one more to do it. And we will do it next week at 10 Pacific. And, yeah, I know that's 1 a.m. Eastern, but that's all right. There's the archive on YouTube. And if you're watching on YouTube, go ahead. Thanks, Tim Marino, for mentioning. Give us the thumbs up. We always appreciate that. And you can leave your comments, and we will get to that in the archives before next week. Anyway, that is next week, but for this week, as I mentioned earlier, Al will be sitting in on the Trump Report tomorrow on AfterBuzz TV, moderated by yours truly. Thank you very much. At 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific. So find that, and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. Al G, where do people find you?
Al G _ at Jamaica House.
Jamaica House Doc, right?
Well, I just gave you my Instagram, yeah. At Jamaica House Doc.
I was like, I got so confused. Anyway. Thank you again to everybody. We will see you next Monday night. Bye, everyone.
Bam!
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Bill Sweetek, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz, see you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.